Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from the Buffalo News. He's a columnist there. He covers the Sabres, covers the Bills. Mike Harrington, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Drew and company, happy new year, and should be an interesting day in Buffalo.
It should be. Which team's in more disarray? I guess the Bills are still in way more disarray than the Sabres, right?
Yeah, because the Sabres, you know what their plan is. They haven't been able to really execute it yet. I mean, the Bills simply don't even know what they're trying to do most of the time, and the dysfunction seems to be going through their organization. The Sabres have a very well laid out plan, and we even had to ask Dan Bylsma in New York the other day, who do you report to, Terry Pegula, the owner, or Tim Murray, the GM, in the wake of the crazy Bills press conference? And Dan Bylsma laid it right out for us. I report to Tim Murray. Tim Murray speaks to ownership every day. I might speak to ownership about once a week, but I report to the general manager. The Sabres have a structure and a plan. They're just trying to execute it.
I guess it's good that he doesn't report to Doug Whaley, because you never would know that. That could have been who he reports to. Doug's, of course, the Bills general manager. But that's for another show there, Mike. You know, we talk about the Sabres plan. You look at the Sabres season, and it's obviously been disappointing. They're at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, tied with the New York Islanders for 37 points. Can it all just be attributed to Jack Eichel and that high ankle sprain he suffered right before the start of the year?
Well, that's certainly high on the list of factors. It can't all be attributed to that. You know, there are certain things when you break down the numbers that just don't make a lot of sense with this team. And they're not out of it by any stretch. They're only 7 points back here, and they have some games at hand. But this is my favorite stat of the season right now, Drew. They have, going into today, they have played 18 home games so far. In 5-on-5 play at home this year, in 18 games, they have 19 goals. Hmm. They simply do not generate enough offense with or without Jack Eichel. They are not deep enough up front. They get nothing from their fourth line. Their power play has been very good. They just have not scored enough goals. The Eichel injury certainly put people in different spots. Then O'Reilly was hurt. They've had a lot of injuries. But you know what? Teams do have injuries, and they have not really done a good enough job playing through it. But the thing is, they're in a relatively weak division. They've got a lot of time here. They have cut their deficit from 10 points to 7 just this week. So they're on the fringe. I mean, they need a winning streak. Everybody seems to have winning streaks in this league this year. The Sabres haven't even won 3 in a row since last week of October. But here's another interesting stat for you. In the year of winning streaks in the NHL, the Buffalo Sabres have not won as many as 5 games in a row since March of 2012. That's a long time to go without stringing some wins together, and that's what you need to do in this league right now.
Well, the Jets, the Sabres' opponent today, of course, looking for their first 3-game winning streak of the season. So many times this year they've won 2 in a row and then fallen short in that elusive third victory. In fact, last season they didn't win 3 in a row until the end of the year when they'd already been eliminated from the playoff race. So two teams looking to streak today in Buffalo.
Mike, you mentioned
the thing is you look at it all. Philadelphia, Minnesota, all these teams aside from Columbus have put together streaks. It hasn't happened yet for either side.
Mm-hmm. Mike, you mentioned that the Sabres are having trouble scoring goals. When you look at the goaltending, Anders Nielsen has started the last 2 games, and the Sabres have picked up 3 of a possible 4 points. Has that been, you know, the nicest surprise for the Sabres team that Anders Nielsen and Robin Lehner have given them some pretty solid goaltending?
Yeah, the goaltending is a hot-button issue in Buffalo, but really, if you were to write down lists of problems with the Sabres this year, goaltending would be way down the list. You know, these guys have played pretty well. The issues with goaltending have simply come in overtime and shootouts. They lead the league with 9 overtime shootout losses. They're 1-5 in shootouts. Leonard has not stopped a shot in 6 attempts, so that's become a big issue, and Nilsson's only 4-8. Nielsen's 4th in the league in even strength save percentage among goalies who've played at least 10 games, and he's only behind Corey Crawford, Devin Dubnyk, and Carey Price. So he's been a big surprise. I'd like to see him a little more. We'll see today who starts, because it would be Nilsson's third start in a row, and that would be pretty significant to me. Now, they're kind of saying, well, Leonard's a little banged up, but I don't know. You know, to me, Nilsson deserves a little more time, but Leonard is the guy they gave up a first-round draft pick for at Ottawa, and that first-round draft pick turned out to be Colin White, and he looked pretty good in the World Juniors. So they're going to, I think, you know, die on the sword, so to speak, in Sabre talk, with Leonard in goal. But it's going to be interesting to me to see who plays today, because then you're going to start questioning Leonard's health for real if he's not in there, or is it just they're deciding to go with Nilsson a little more?
Mike, the comments by Jack Eichel were widely publicized. Obviously, you covered it quite extensively. How were they received by, first, his teammates, and secondly, by fans?
I thought it went very well with the fan base. There was a lot of people outside Buffalo who were giving the, oh, it's a temper tantrum, it's a spoiled, petulant kid act, and that's just a bunch of garbage. That's people who didn't understand what was going on here. This fan base wanted to see someone get angry about the way this team was playing. And Jack Eichel got very angry in the locker room in Boston, and people here who have followed this team all year, their reaction was pretty much good. It's about time. You know, people on the outside who didn't understand what had been going on here were like, oh, it's a spoiled kid, and it's just ridiculous. In the locker room, I don't know. It's a weird locker room. I think the players were fine with what Jack Eichel said. They didn't disagree, but it's just I've wanted to see more anger in that locker room after losses. And a lot of the time you go in that locker room and the door opens and there's no one in there. And one of the only guys who's ever in there after a loss is Jack Eichel, and he takes losing very hard. So I had absolutely zero problem with it. In fact, it was probably overdue.
Mike Harrington, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike covers the Sabres for the Buffalo News. Mike, you wrote a column about 2 weeks ago now, right around Christmas, talking about Dan Bylsma and Tim Murray and how the Sabres were a mess and that Bylsma's system just seems to leave the Sabres discombobulated on the ice. Obviously, that wouldn't have changed too dramatically in the last 2 weeks, but is Dan Bylsma overcoaching this team? Would that be a fair assessment?
I think at times that's absolutely what's going on. He has what I think players consider to be a complicated system. There are too many guys on the ice, in my view, who are thinking about what they're doing. And hockey is not a thinking game. It's a reactive game. And if they're thinking about the game too much, and I think of specifically Zemgus Girgensons, I think of Tyler Ennis when he was healthy, I think they're a little hamstrung by Bylsma's system. I think they have lost some of their creativity because of Bylsma's system. There's too many line shuffles in my eyes, you know, and I, at times there's too many guys in the wrong spot. I think part of Eichel's frustration was he was with Molson and Foligno, and Eichel was being slowed down. All of a sudden, after Eichel went off, Okposo ended up on his line. Boy, Eichel's looked pretty good the last two games. You know, you do kind of wonder with Bylsma about what happened at the Olympics and what happened the last couple of years in Pittsburgh. And, you know, I've talked to some people in Pittsburgh, and you know what they say, guys? They say pretty honestly, if Sidney Crosby liked Dan Bylsma, Dan Bylsma would still be the coach in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. Mike, it's been almost 2 years since Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian were traded to the Buffalo Sabres for Drew Stafford and Tyler Myers, a first-rounder, Brendan Lemieux, and Joel Armia. 23 months later, how would you assess Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian's time in Buffalo?
I think this trade is a total wash for everybody. Look at the number of games that Myers and Stafford and Armia have missed injury-wise. Stafford had a nice first year out in Winnipeg. Bogosian is just not very good. He can't stay healthy. He's not that hard on the puck. I've always said since the trade was made, I would rather have had Tyler Myers and Bogosian. Now, I would rather have the Myers that we saw in Buffalo healthy, not the Myers you guys have seen out there. Kane, you know, his situation is well documented off the ice. He's been pretty good on the ice here in the last month or so. He had no goals into December, you know, coming off the rib injury. And what has he got now? Eight or nine. You know, he's not Yeah, he's got 9 goals in 27 games. He's not the best all-around player. He had a tough night the other night in Chicago. He was -3. You know, to me, the trade is going to be all about Brendan Lemieux and Jack Roslovich. That's where the Winnipeg might get advantages. Because to me, this thing has been a total wash otherwise, pretty much for both sides.
Mike, you know, we always talk about draft and develop. Is, you know, Winnipeg and Buffalo both known as teams that are drafting younger players and getting younger in their lineup. How important was it for this team to, or is it, I should say, is it for this team to make try and make a playoff run this season?
Well, I think this was the goal. You know, Bylsma even said at development camp in July, you know, this can be a 95-point team. Now, I think with the construction of this defense, that was has played out to be a foolish statement. But they felt that last year was their building team. They had tanked to get Eichel. They went last year from 54 points to 81. Things were looking good. Now, it's tougher to go from 54 to 81 than it is to go from 81 to 95, and they're finding that out. But they felt they could be in the mix. Now, one of the things that's happening here that's going to be a big looming elephant over the second half of this season for the Sabres is if the Toronto Maple Leafs make the playoffs, that will not play very well in Buffalo at all. Because the perception was that the Leafs were behind the Sabres by a year. That this was the Leafs' build-up year like the Sabres had last year. You don't suddenly go from the bottom into the playoffs in 1 year. You have to get your generational player, and then you have to build around him. Lo and behold, look where the Leafs are and look where the Sabres are. That's going to be a real problem for Tim Murray if the Sabres are languishing around in that 80-point range out of the playoffs and the Leafs are playing in April in a best-of-seven series somewhere.
Mike Harrington, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Mike, it was a trade that was made in the offseason. I liked it when it was made. That was the acquisition of Dmitry Kulikov from the Panthers in exchange for Mark Pisick. It's been an unmitigated disaster, Kulikov has been. Why? I mean, you know, this is a guy who, you know, showed flashes in Florida. I mean, it's, he's been that. Why has he been that bad for Buffalo?
Well, you're right. It's kind of hard to believe, and I just think we've never seen him healthy. You know, he was certainly very good in the playoffs for Florida against the Islanders, which is really what prompted Tim Murray to make the trade. They wanted to be a little more physical. They didn't think Pisick was a physical player enough. You know, the analytics crowd loves Pisick, but that's another story in itself. When Kulikov got hurt here after the World Cup, he came back, played a game. He got hurt in a preseason game against the Leafs. He hit his back on the open bench door. He was pushed into the corner of the door when it was open, and he's never been right since. I don't think we've seen Dmitry Kulikov play a game in Buffalo healthy all season, and he's apparently improving again some. He went and saw another doctor. You know, they continue to look for things. You know, I've asked, are there chip fractures in his back? Does he have a herniated disc? They say no. He keeps coming back and playing, and then a few games later, he's out of the lineup again. Kulikov, to me, is, you know, an injury situation, and because he's got an expiring contract, you know, who knows what might happen to him. But that's a big misstep for Murray to deal Mark Pisick and to get a guy they thought would really help them and be more physical on defense, and they expect him to be a top-pair guy with Rasmus Ristolainen, and it hasn't worked at all.
Mike, sticking with the defense there, and we've just got one last question for you here. Rasmus Ristolainen, he's second on the team in scoring. He's got 26 points. You know, for our listeners who remember, he reported to training camp without a contract, and they ended up signing that six-year contract in mid-October. Is he having an underrated season in Buffalo, considering that, you know, he's second on the team, 26 points?
Yeah, I think he would be a top 10 choice for the Norris right now. And the question about Ristolainen was, he was the number one defenseman in Buffalo. Was he a number one defenseman in the NHL, a legitimate number one NHL defenseman? We're finding out this year the answer to that question is unequivocally yes. He's been pushing 28, 29, 30 minutes a game when they've had a run of injuries here. Biles would like to get him more in that 25, 26-minute range, but he's got 23 assists. He's in on roughly a third of their goals. The team PR department had a stat for a while. He was third in the league behind Connor McDavid and Erik Karlsson in percentage of assists of the team's goals. This is certainly the best year he's had. He's become a real horse for them. He is a legitimate number one guy. And that's what they needed here as part of the building. And actually, entering Friday, Ristolainen's fifth in that percentage now. 28.8% of the assists of his teammates' goals. He's only behind Connor McDavid, Erik Karlsson, Tyler Seguin, and Patrick Kane. That's pretty good company.
pretty good company indeed. Mike Harrington covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Mike, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for doing this.
All right, gentlemen. Take care. Always a pleasure.
Likewise, Mike. Let's head to break. When we return, what are we doing when we return? Might as well look at the show plan. When we return, we're going to talk about the Blackhawks. They signed Artemi Panarin to a two-year contract extension. We'll talk about the contract, and we'll talk about the ramifications on the Blackhawks roster. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, it was a top priority for us, and you have to be patient with these things. They don't always come together, you know, when you first start the negotiations. But I was confident from the beginning that we were going to be able to get something done. But you have to do your work and put the time in. And obviously, I got to commend Artemi and his representatives for clearly they want to be here and they wanted to be part of what we have here in Chicago. And you know, when that happens, that's when deals get made.
That's Chicago Blackhawks general manager Stan Bowman talking about the Artemi Panarin contract extension. The Blackhawks super sophomore gets a two-year, $12 million contract extension. It's a bit of a bridge deal, but the Blackhawks can really only afford bridge deals, and even then, this will result in some roster manipulation. So it's $6 million per season for Panarin to remain as a member of the Chicago Blackhawks. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. A big thank you to Winnipeg comedy fans. Our Aries Spears from Mad TV, he's in town this weekend. All shows already sold out because Winnipeg comedy fans know that Rumors Comedy Club is bringing them the goods in the comedy world. Some great shows upcoming. Remember, in about beginning of March, so what's that, about 2 months from now, Jay Farrow, formerly of Saturday Night Live, he's going to be at Rumors. Buy your tickets now because they're going to go quickly. Also, all shows available, rumorscomedyclub.com. 2 years, $12 million for Panarin. Is this a deal the Blackhawks had to make no matter what?
Yeah, I think it was, Drew. And you look at who the Chicago Blackhawks have lost in not only the last couple of years, but the last 5 years, really. Mm-hmm. You can go back to even 2010 guys when the Blackhawks had to trade guys like Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien because they were going to be over the salary cap, right? So when you talk about, you know, Artemi Panarin, you know, you mentioned, Drew, that he's the super sophomore, won the Calder Trophy last year, and he might have been 24 years old, but, I mean, it was incredible. They couldn't afford to lose Panarin. I mean, this guy is an absolutely dynamic goal scorer, and, you know, what I find interesting about the Artemi Panarin signing is that two things. It's a two-year contract,
yeah,
as opposed to maybe, you know, a 4 or 5 year contract, and also, he's still only the fourth highest paid guy on this team after Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, and Brent Seabrook. Surprisingly, Panarin's going to make more than Duncan Keith, one of the best defensemen in the NHL. So, I mean, they had to sign Artemi Panarin, Drew. And, you know, recently, you know, they lost Brandon Saad. Yeah. They had to trade Andrew Shaw. I mean, when they traded Andrew Shaw, I mean, Andrew Shaw's won the cup twice with the Chicago Blackhawks. He was a big part of those cup-winning teams. So the writing was on the wall when they traded Andrew Shaw. And you remember, they also had to trade Teuvo Teravainen, and they also traded Brian Bickle, who was making, I believe, around $4 million a year.
In the same deal, because they had to the price for Carolina to take the Bickle contract. And, of course, Bickle, out of the lineup, he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis,
right,
so we wish him the best. The price for taking the Bickle contract off the Blackhawks' books was Teuvo Teravainen.
Right, and when you're talking about Andrew Shaw, Brian Bickle, Teuvo Teravainen, I mean, they played a key role on the team that won the Stanley Cup in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So these aren't just, you know, spare parts. But Panarin, I mean, we saw, you know, he was top 10 in the NHL in scoring last year, yeah, you know, and he hasn't missed a beat this year. Wow. He's a top scorer for the Chicago Blackhawks. So they absolutely had to get him under contract. And $6 million, you know, seems like, you know, the right amount for a guy who finished top 10 in the league in scoring. And, you know, the sky's the limit for him. He might be 25 years old, but he's a guy that might put up more points down the road. So I think it was a great signing by the Chicago Blackhawks, and when you look at, you know, the players that they have in the lineup, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, you know, Marian Hossa is having a better year than he had last year. I mean, this team, in my opinion, you know, we know they're first in the Central right now, Drew, but I think they still have to be considered a favorite in the West to get to the Stanley Cup final.
I'd agree with you there. Panarin sixth in the NHL in scoring so far this season, 40 points, 42 games played. $6 million a year for the next couple seasons after this one, at which point in time he'll be an unrestricted free agent at the age of 27, 28. So he can certainly cash in with another big contract at that point in his Problem for the Blackhawks, and it's been a problem each and every season, a good problem to have, mind you, is that next year they have 13 guys under contract, and they already have just under $65 million in allotment of the salary cap. And without an expected, the salary cap certainly not going to rise significantly, if at all, from this year to next. I mean, you're either going to have to fill all your remaining roster spots with guys who are making the minimum salary, or you're going to have to look to start to trade away another one of your younger players, your Andrew Shaw-esque players, maybe a guy like Marcus Kruger, who's due to make $3 million next year, is going to have to move on. Richard Panik's going to be a restricted free agent. It's the same year, same thing year in, year out for the Blackhawks. Is they keep their core, and they have to recycle through their expendable guys.
Well, but they've done a great job of bringing in guys, whether it's from college hockey or from the American Hockey League. You look at guys like Ryan Hartman and Tyler Mott, who played with Kyle Connor at the University of Michigan last year. Vinny Hinostroza. I mean, the Hawks have done a good job of making sure that the cupboard stays full so that they have guys that they can bring into the system, whether it's minor league players or their own draft picks, right? Tyler Mott was a draft pick of the Chicago Blackhawks, as well as Ryan Hartman. Ryan Hartman's been a pleasant surprise. I believe he's played almost every game for the Chicago Blackhawks this year. So, I mean, the Blackhawks, it's unreal when you have guys like Taves and Kane making the big money. They're the highest paid guys in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And, you have, $13 million between Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook. Now you're paying Panarin $6 million a year. I mean, Stan Bowman, I think, has done an excellent job managing the salary cap, maybe better than anybody.
So looking at this Blackhawks roster, next season, who is, quote, who is the expendable guy?
Brian Campbell's on a 1-year contract,
right? But he's making $1.5 million.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, he's a guy that you don't know if he'll be back next year. The defense is for me the bigger question mark, Drew, because you're so good at the top. Marian Hossa's under contract long term. Mm-hmm. We already talked about Taves and Kane. Panarin's going to be under contract for 2 more years after this year. So really, a guy like Marcus Kruger, he's a quintessential fourth line guy. He's been part of both cup winning teams over the last two cups the Hawks have won. So I don't know necessarily that they're going to move a guy like Marcus Kruger. He actually has a pretty good cap hit. So
it's over $3 million for a team that has
He's a good player, though.
I know he's a good player.
Anybody will take him on their team.
Well, and that's the problem for Stan Bowman. I mean, Stan Bowman obviously doesn't want to get rid of Marcus Kruger.
Right.
But when you're facing the situation they are, which is $64 million spent already on 13 players, he might not be somebody that the Blackhawks can afford.
Sure. It's possible. You're using Marcus Kruger. But the point is, Drew, that they are going to have some decisions to make because you have so many high-paid guys, right? You have six guys making over $5 million a year? So, I mean, they have some incredible talent on this team. And what he's shown is that he can do this year after year. Stan Bowman has shown that despite having, salary cap problems after cup-winning seasons, he's been able to make it work. So, I think they'll be fine.
Would you dare to consider moving Corey Crawford?
No. He's a top five goalie in the NHL.
He's making $6 million a year.
Yeah, but he's a good goalie.
I know he's a good goalie. I mean, Scott Darling's numbers in fewer games, mind you, and Scott Darling's not as good a goalie as Corey Crawford. I'm just making sure that everyone hears that. But I'm saying you're trying to...
Where would the Hawks be without Corey Crawford in net? They wouldn't have won the last two cups.
Right. That's past. I mean, being sentimental...
Well, I mean, Corey Crawford isn't exactly, he's not a washed-up goaltender.
No,
he's in his late 20s.
No, he's a little bit... Corey Crawford's
the age
32 years old.
Okay, 32.
I know. I'm just saying, if you need...
You asked the question. No, they're not trading him.
Okay, so you wouldn't... If of the core group...
No. Why would they trade Corey Crawford?
Because they need to make salary cap space.
Yeah, but they need a number one goaltender.
Right. And if you could find a number
Scott one... Scott Darling's not a number one goaltender.
I don't disagree with you. But if you could
So who's going to be your number one goaltender then?
You know, Ryan Miller. Let's suggest... I mean, I'm throwing out names here.
No. I'm sorry. That won't happen.
Okay. I mean, you don't have to apologize to me about it. That doesn't, I don't really
Well, I don't, I'm just... You asked the question.
I asked the question.
I gave you the answer. Corey Crawford is, I think, a top five goalie in the NHL. And I don't think you trade top five goalies in the NHL. Are the Capitals going to trade Braden Holtby?
No, but the Capitals don't have the same salary cap problems that the Chicago Blackhawks do. And this is keeping in mind that
hey,
the
if it happens, it happens, Drew. You can say that you were right.
I don't think it's going to happen. I'm just saying the Blackhawks and this salary cap situation the Blackhawks are in is actually worse because assuming that Panarin hits all of his Schedule A bonuses, which he's going to because he's already got 40 points on the year, it's going to be another $2.75 million on the cap next season. So I'm just saying that this Blackhawks cap situation, Stan Bowman's done a magical job at keeping them afloat. But at some point in time, and I wonder if it's next year, they're getting really, really close to running into trouble there. I don't think they're going to do anything with Corey Crawford. I agree. I'm just saying, would they consider it? Something worth watching. Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press, he joins us next from Buffalo ahead of the Jets and the Sabres. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you here in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's how you can reach us here in studio as well. Our Facebook is facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Joining us from Buffalo is Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press. Jeff, first and foremost, glad you're safe, buddy. A little bit of a scary situation there in Florida.
Yeah, a couple hours, I guess. That's pretty nuts. Didn't really hear anything about it until we were well out of the area and in Buffalo. But yeah, certainly a tragedy and crazy. And but again, you know, didn't really see any of it. Just like anybody else, read about it when it went down.
Absolutely. So glad to be in Buffalo, certainly. And the Jets and the Sabres will do battle in about 4 hours' time. The Jets looking for that elusive third victory in a row on the season. You know, coming off of a very impressive Florida road trip where they take both games in both in Tampa and then in Sunrise, you know, this Jets team, is it now the time, Jeff, where if you don't go on a 3, 4, 5, 6 game winning streak, you're getting almost too late in the season to really begin to rack up the points?
You'd think so. I mean, it's a fair statement. The thing is and Paul Maurice noted yesterday when I kind of pressed him on the whole 3-game win streak and how Brian Little, when you know, didn't really even know that was the case, and was reminded by the media. I think it was after the Florida game, and I asked Maurice if that surprised him, and he said not really, and went on to say, you know, it doesn't matter if you're winning 3 games as long as you're winning 2 out of 3. And you know what? It's that is true. The Winnipeg Jets haven't been winning 2 out of 3. In fact, they're at, you know, a 500 record, and that would be a, you know, a 6-6-7 record. But you know, and that is the case. I mean, down the stretch, if they can win 2 out of every 3 games and not put together that 3-game win streak, they'll be in the playoffs. But the reality is you need to get on a run, and long runs, you know, create confidence within a team. We saw it with the Columbus Blue Jackets, obviously, who snapped theirs at 16 and have all but secured a playoff spot. So the time is now. I mean, the time was probably a few weeks back, but you know, they don't have that that luxury. So against the Buffalo Sabres team, who, you know, isn't so great in the standings, but have collected 3 of a possible 4 points in the last 2 games, including a you know, an overtime loss to Chicago, they got to beat them, you know, and they got to come home and create those good feelings.
Jeff, you had a nice piece in the Winnipeg Free Press yesterday on Jacob Trouba, and it seems like Paul Maurice just can't stop talking about Jacob Trouba, and I can't argue with him. He's got 7 points in his last 5 games. How important is it for the Winnipeg Jets that Jacob Trouba is playing the big minutes and producing?
Well, it's been huge. I mean, to the point where you know, he's been able to minimize the damage of losing a guy like Tyler Myers. Now, Myers is going to miss his 24th or 25th game today, you know, with that lower body injury. But when he comes back, you know, he's not going to come back and play on that second pairing. He's most likely going to play and, you know, add a big boost rather or to that third pairing. And you know, Jacob Trouba has been one of those guys where obviously, you know, a highly publicized contract dispute earlier in the year kind of created harsh feelings among the fan base. But when he came back, his teammates welcomed him, and a little bit of a slow start with having missed training camp and then, you know, 13 games to start the season. But he really has come along as one of the most consistent players on that blue line, you know, and he's to the point where, you know, he wasn't considered for the power play, and now he's being put on there just because his play has been so well. And I think, you know, the 7 points in five games there is, you know, an impressive stat for a guy like Jacob Trouba, who hasn't exactly jumped off the board offensively for this team in his years here. But I think the most impressive part has been his defensive zone play. I mean, he's been physical, he's been throwing the body, he's been defensively sound, and that goes a long way for a Jets team that's had, you know, far too many defensive breakdowns this season. And Jacob Trouba is certainly on trending upwards, and it's good to see, because you never knew what was going to happen. A lot of people had him had already kind of, even unfairly, at 22 years old, it kind of put a ceiling on him already. And, you know, you're getting what you see from him last year, a guy who scored about 20 some points. So, you know what, it's good to see for the Jets and for Jets fans. And, you know, I don't think it's going to stop from here. I think he's been so consistent of late that I think you're only going to see a better Jacob Trouba as the season goes on.
Jeff, I believe after it was you who asked Connor Hellebuyck about the Tampa game. You said, what was that game? If that game was about redemption, and then what was the Florida Panthers game? And he said that was also about redemption. I thought that was an interesting answer, so I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on that. And also, do you think that he's taken the criticism and now he's ready to roll with that number one role?
I think so. I mean, he's been, you know, he's an interesting guy. I mean, he's an interesting quote. You know, he's a goalie, so as we all know, goalies are a little bit different than your average player. But he's, you know, I think he's taking it with stride. It's been an up and down season for him, just as it's been for the entire team. And you know, that spotlight is a lot brighter on those goalies, particularly a young guy at 23 years old who's kind of been, I wouldn't say rushed into this situation. I think, you know, it's a situation that he's wanted and has embraced. And I think if you had asked him, he's been ready to take over that number one spot starting last year. And this season, it's kind of been if it's been one thing about the Jets, I think it's been a weird kind of treatment with him. It's, you know, here's a couple games, you know, we're going to do a rotation, then you're going to get a whole chunk of games, which he did kind of there in November. And then back to a little bit of rotation. Now we're finally, you know, seeing, you know, Hellebuyck starting a third straight game today, maybe him taking over the reins. I think that's what you got to do. I don't think Michael Hutchinson has proven, you know, at times he's been okay. I just don't think his workload suggests he's been a reliable, you know, backup to this point. So you got to ride the hot hand. And even if Connor Hellebuyck does slip, I still think you need to get him as many games as you can. If he's the guy, and he is the guy that the Jets believe is going to be the future of this net, you got to give him the more time. So I think he's ready to embrace that. And you know, so far it's been pretty good. I mean, this hasn't had a goalie that's played back-to-back games on back-to-back nights. So he did that with the sweep through Florida, and I imagine he'll be getting a big share of the games in the second half.
And you, just to follow up with that, Jeff, you get a sense that the coach isn't as, you know, throwing his hands in the air, worried as everyone else seems to be, like the fan base or maybe the media, simply because I thought his answer was curious or interesting when he said, you know, you guys seem to make a bigger deal because he's the last line of defense. But when other young players make mistakes, it's not as glaring or it's not as brought up. So I thought that was an interesting comment from the coach.
Yeah, but also kind of, to be honest with you, a little bit of a backtrack comment. I mean, a week before that, he was the one that publicly announced that they didn't have a number one goaltender.
Right.
That neither guy had played to the point where he was a number one guy. So that's what I meant. That's what I mean when I say it's been a little bit of a weird treatment by this team. Like, you know, you look at this, you see that statement, you see the stats, like, why isn't Connor Hellebuyck playing against the Columbus Blue Jackets? You know, you're rewarding Michael Hutchinson for a game against Vancouver. At that point, I know Vancouver's gone on this bit of a surge here, but let's face it, kind of surprising to everybody. Vancouver's not all that impressive. So, you know, to kind of give him that game after Connor Hellebuyck had arguably his best game in Chicago, you know, a few nights before, I mean, it's just been this kind of weird treatment. And, you know, I mean, we can analyze on the outside, and you know, whatever kind of perspective we get from the inside at certain times. I mean, it's just been a little bit of a weird move, but it is true. I mean, when you do have, you know, if Nick Ehlers has a game where, you know, he's struggling to hit the stat sheet, you know, he went through that whole time of not scoring those goals, and now he just seems, everything seems to be going in. That isn't he's not given the same treatment by the media or by the public for a goalie who, you know, maybe playing some pretty good hockey, but isn't earning the wins. And, you know, if he allows that one weak goal, and we have seen that kind of during that stretch there, he gets piled on. So it is certainly different, but that's kind of the way it goes with goaltenders, whether you're 23 or whether you're 33. I mean, those, you're going to be under the spotlight. You kind of need to be the best player on the team. And when you're not, and, you're going to get that criticism. But as I said before, I think he's handled it well, and is only going to continue to handle it better with more experience.
Jeff Hamilton, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jeff's in Buffalo, where the Jets and Sabres will do battle in a little less than 4 hours' time from now. Jeff, you know, we were talking about this earlier in the program. Since the 1st of December, the Jets' power play, which had been the source of so much consternation for this season and previous seasons, is top 10 in the NHL at 22.7%. That's 8th best in the league. You know, do you attribute that to anything in particular? Is it sort of Brian Little's return to the lineup? Is it the Jets maybe simplifying the system? What do you attribute the improved power play to?
Well, if you ask Paul Maurice, it's been kind of a couple things. First of all, getting Brian Little back into the mix. You have two different lineups. I'm going to do a piece on this, actually, coming out for Monday, most likely.
Ooh, a preview.
Yes, a preview. Yeah, I've talked to quite a few guys about the power play and its uniqueness of, you know, you got one unit with when Jacob Trouba's on it, with Mark Scheifele, Nick Ehlers, Nick Patan, Patrick Laine. You know, the youngest guy is, or the oldest guy rather, is 23 years old. So you got this kind of youth five somewheres. The other group with your, you know, Drew Stafford, Matthew Perreault, Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, Dustin Byfuglien is kind of that old veteran. And as much as they kind of have similar systems, one's more of that grind, get the puck to the net, get kind of the scrum in front, where the other one, obviously the younger guys, with especially with that booming shot from Laine, is a little bit more finesse. It's a little bit more, you know, creativity involved there. And I think it's just been continuity. I mean, when the healthy bodies come back and you're able to work together, and then the whole schedule thing, the Jets weren't really practicing for a long time. So as much as you can do film and kind of talk about it off the ice, there's nothing like getting onto the ice and getting some of that the chemistry going. And the more you play with these guys, the less you're thinking about it. You know, it's just kind of becomes second nature. You know where your outs are. You know where, you know, the guy's going to be in any given situation, and you're only going to get more comfortable with time. So I think that success we've seen from the Jets in the power play of late has been because of just that, you know, that continuity and that growing confidence and knowing that, you know, because power play is a huge momentum thing. You know, you talk a lot about momentum in hockey, but it's a point of pride for these guys. I mean, these guys come off and they don't score for 2, 3, 4 opportunities. There really is, you know, it's like going in a scoring slump for a player. It's, you really can get on you mentally and can become frustrated. And when you're frustrated, things, you know, tend to get worse. They don't tend to get better. So they've seen some results, and that's a big thing. And from results comes confidence, and confidence becomes a solid power play. So we're starting to see the early stages of that. If they can continue that, that's something they're going to need down the stretch. They need those goals. If they're going to win one goal games everywhere, they need to kind of find that, that difference, that edge. And if it can be the power play, and for many teams it is, you know, that's just as good.
Jeff, you mentioned Tyler Myers earlier, and he hasn't played since early November against the Colorado Avalanche. He's been skating with the Jets in an orange non-contact jersey, and you've been on the road trip with the Jets in Florida and now Buffalo. How close is Tyler Myers to returning to the lineup, do you think?
Honestly, like, I don't know, guys. I mean, it's so interesting. I mean, this guy's been day-to-day since mid-November, and it's I mean, it was that huge celebration when he came out on the ice in Tampa Bay, and, you know, to a round of applause. Guys want to see this guy, you know, obviously in the lineup. But I haven't seen him since. You know, is he doing extra work here and there? Maybe. I'm not 100% sure. They've been kind of quiet on that front as far as updates, and the updates have been obviously slow. But this, he's going to need to get back on the ice. He's going to need to, you know, start passing some physical tests. Then he's going to have to get cleared for contact, and then he's going to have to get into some practices, because you can't go 2 months of not playing NHL hockey, just being thrown into a game, not just because you're not only are you not in game shape, but you're more susceptible to injury when you're, you know, if you start exerting yourself to the degree that an NHL game asks of you. So I would have to say at least a week before he's skating or cleared from contact. And after that, you know, at least another week. I think 2 weeks, if he was on the ice and, you know, by the time the end of January comes around, I'd be maybe not surprised, but I think that would be, you know, an okay estimate. Who knows? It's been so long at this point that, you know, any guess would be a wrong one, and or could be a wrong one. And but I know one thing is for sure, that this team would like to have him back. If you're looking at, you know, going on a long run in that second half, that third pairing of Paul Postma and Ben Sherratt, I mean, no offense to those guys, but they need to have a better presence on that unit, whether it be just from the defensive zone or a guy who, as gifted as Tyler Myers is offensively, to actually just bring the puck up and get those outlet passes to good lines. Because when you have three defensive pairings and four lines, three of which are kind of need that boost, you know, good zone entries, you need that puck moving defenseman, and that's what Tyler Myers brings to the lineup and will bring when he does eventually get back.
From the longest day-to-day injury in the history of the NHL, Jeff, it's unbelievable.
Sorry?
I said it's the longest day-to-day injury we've probably ever seen in the NHL.
It kind of reminds me of the Bombers, you know? It's like it's day-to-day for forever, and it's, I don't think they're honestly trying to be secret. I just think it's been setback after setback.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think it's obviously one of those issues. This guy's had knee and hip surgery in the off season. You know, is it one of those injuries? Is it a different injury? Is it a groin because he's had to overcompensate because of those injuries? I mean, who knows? But it's certainly not a good sign for a guy, like I said, they desperately want to get back into the lineup.
Well, sticking with defense, you know, a young player who I saw a lot of with the Moose last season, Josh Morrissey's made a nice transition to the NHL game. And one of the things I thought was kind of curious yesterday's presser with Coach Maurice was how he revealed that Dustin Byfuglien asked to play with Josh Morrissey this season. I thought that was an interesting comment. What did you think of the coach's comments with respect to that?
Yeah, me too. Like, it didn't surprise me, but you kind of, because he's very outspoken, so it's kind of, you know, it's ironic because he doesn't really speak much to the media, but he does. I think his opinion carries great weight in that dressing room. So to have an ambassador in some way to Josh Morrissey is a great thing. I mean, it's he has earned it. I mean, Josh Morrissey's been spectacular this season. He's by far, I think, the biggest surprise and blessing to a certain degree for this team this year. I mean, this is a guy who, heading into training camp, by no means had a locked spot, and the expectations there was far fewer expectations than question marks around this guy, and he played all 41 games in the top pairing of your defense and has played well. I mean, his offensive contributions won't jump off the page. I think he's got, what, one goal and five assists in the first 41 games, but his defensive zone play has been special. He's had to compensate for an erratic at times Dustin Byfuglien on the ice. I mean, how many times have we seen him and, you know, the far blue line and the other teams on the attack? And so, you know, he's done a great job. He's a guy who I think is going to be with this team for a long time, has a tremendous attitude and approach to the game. And, you know, it is really a welcome surprise for the Jets and good for Josh Morrissey, because a lot of players, you know what, like for what he went through and so many years of question marks, and for a guy who, you know, like many, had an incredible junior season, to be able to kind of bounce back and put in the kind of year that he's had, that's not only a testament to him, but also to Dustin Byfuglien, as you mentioned, you know, with the comments and his guidance, I'm sure that's gone a long way for the young guy.
Jeff Hamilton covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. He joins us from Buffalo, where the Jets and Sabres will do battle at 12 noon Central Time this afternoon. Jeff, appreciate it. Travel home safe, and we'll see you at the arena next week, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. Stay warm.
Likewise, Jeff.
Thanks a lot, Hammer.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets expansion draft options at the halfway mark of the season. Has your opinion changed at all? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Deflected the first shot, it was stopped. He got the rebound, standing
scoring on the doorstep. A couple of whacks. He finds pay dirt, and we're tied at two.
One of the most popular candidates, not very popular, I suppose, but one of the players most likely mentioned as somebody the Jets may lose in the expansion draft is Adam Lowry. That clip, a goal of him scoring from earlier this season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Now that we're at Game 41, guys, I wanted to, you know, we've been talking about this sort of periodically throughout the season and throughout the offseason, the expansion draft. Now that we're at Game 41, entering Game 42 this afternoon in Buffalo, has your opinion on the Jets' expansion draft options changed since earlier in the year? As you wrote an article, I think back in November, about the Jets and their expansion draft options. A reminder, you can either go 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goalie on your protected list, or you can go 8 skaters of your choosing. Doesn't matter if it's 7 defensemen and 1 forward, or 6 forwards and 2 defensemen, or 8 skaters and 1 goalie of your choosing. Has your options changed? I mean, for the most part, everyone thought the Jets were going to have to go with the 8 skaters options because they were going to have to protect 4 defensemen. Byfuglien and Enstrom, who have to be protected due to their no-move clauses. Trouba and Myers. Given where we are here today, where we haven't seen Tyler Myers on the ice whatsoever, has your opinion changed about what the Jets are going to do with the expansion draft?
No, and you mentioned, you know, I wrote the article back in late November, and Dave actually wrote it, I believe it was about 8 months earlier, before we knew if it was just going to be one expansion team or two expansion teams. But, you know, Drew, I have essentially the same players being protected by the Jets, and we don't know if the Jets are going to choose option one where you can protect 11 players or if they're going to go with option two where you protect 9 players, and that's including the goalie, obviously. Mm-hmm. But we know which players are locks to be protected. We know that because of no movement clauses for Tobias Enstrom and Dustin Byfuglien, they're going to be protected. We know that the Jets are going to protect Connor Hellebuck, or I should say we expect it to be Connor Hellebuck. And when you're talking about the forwards, I don't think anybody is going to argue that Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, and Brian Little are going to be 3 of those forwards. And the dilemma for Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff is, do you protect 1 extra defenseman or do you go with 3 extra forwards, right? Because if they go with option 2 and they protect Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers, that means that, as you mentioned, Adam Lowry, Matthew Perreault, Joel Armia, or Marco Dano has to be exposed in the expansion draft, right, guys? So, I mean, if I was Kevin Cheveldayoff, I would probably go with option 1. I don't think they want to lose a guy like Joel Armia or Adam Lowry. I had the Jets protecting Adam Lowry in option 2 over Matthew Perreault, and I ended up picking Lowry because I think he has a more favorable cap hit, and because of his age, I think they would be better off protecting Adam Lowry, and I think they really see him, you know, as a great third liner, you know, for many years to come. So I don't think much has changed, Drew. I mean, Jacob Trouba's played better, but I had the Jets protecting Jacob Trouba under both options. I don't think that they're going to expose Jacob Trouba if he's still a member of the Jets, and that means under option 1, you got to expose Tyler Myers.
Well, that's going to be my question, Dave, to you now, is you haven't seen Tyler Myers on the ice for, as Jeff mentioned in the previous interview, you know, over 20 games now. He's coming off surgery last season. If you don't see him, you know, for the next few weeks or when he comes back, if he comes back this season, as we still expect him to come back, you know, if he doesn't look like he's healthier, if he doesn't look like he's the Tyler Myers that the Jets expect, could you see them considering exposing him and his $5.5 million contract? Maybe taking the chance that the contract or maybe his injury status scares off the Las Vegas Golden Knights?
I guess it would really come down to whether they're going to be able to extend Jacob Trouba, because I think, like, you want to know that you're going to have Jacob Trouba long term. I think you should want to have that anyways. But, I mean, I think that if you don't think you're going to have Jacob Trouba long term and you're going to lose Tyler Myers, that could be problematic for this defensive core for years to come. So I think there's so many intangibles that are still you know, not known yet, Drew. So, you know, do the Jets make it to the expansion draft with both Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers on the roster? You know, that to me, obviously, I mean, well, obvious statement, but that's the critical question.
Well, the way Jacob Trouba's been playing, you can't afford to lose him.
I've been saying that all along. I just, you know, I mean, and his play has only reinforced that, but I mean, like, and I agree with Ezra. Like, I had Jacob Trouba protected because you have to. Like, he's your 2012 first-round pick. You can't afford to not have those, especially one who can play as well as Trouba can for years to come. I mean, let's be realistic. He's a workhorse.
And he has the more favorable cap hit, right?
Yeah.
Tyler Myers has $5.5 million left for two more years after this season. So I think it's that, Dave, the fact that, you know, he's the more promising defenseman, he's younger, but also his cap hit is more favorable. But again, do the Jets don't want to lose Tyler Myers either. He plays big minutes for them.
Well, theoretically he does, except the fact that he hasn't been on the ice.
Well, I mean, I don't think that necessarily changes anything.
I think
the fact that
he's
injured, I don't think changes one thing.
Really?
No.
You have a guy that big who's had two injury-riddled seasons in a row, and not, you know, not a broken leg that heals or, you know, an ACL that heals, but, you know, you hear, you know, big guy, you hear the words hip injury. But you can't help but be concerned about that in terms of a long-term health situation.
Yeah, they're probably more concerned, Drew, but I think more so the reason why they would pick Trouba over Myers is because he has a higher upside.
Oh, I agree. I agree with that. But, I mean, I'm saying, my point is that do you consider if he's still injured, if he's not the Tyler Myers that they expected to, when they acquired.
You're saying,
from,
do you protect forwards over Myers?
Do you protect the yeah. Do you get the extra?
And that's
forwards?
Why I had Myers exposed under option one.
So, well, right.
And but, I don't think that's changed. I think if anything, it reinforces that.
I know, but which option do you think the Jets pick? I mean, I know you went through the scenarios.
It's tough to say, right? Because again, do you pick exposing a defenseman over the forwards?
Well, everybody expected that if Tyler Myers had been healthy all year long, the Jets were going to have to go protect those 4D and then expose the four forwards, and that, which means they were going to lose Lowry, Dano, Kopp, Armia, etc. Do you now maybe reconsider that, given Myers' health, and go, hey, you know, I'm going to take the risk of exposing Tyler Myers, guy who hasn't been healthy, guy who, you know, may or may not return at full strength this season. Do you then maybe take that risk and say, I'm going to hold on to my seven forwards instead of my four forwards? I'm going to hold on to the three defensemen.
I think it becomes a factor. I think there's no question about it. I think, like, you definitely start to think about that. But I go back to the idea of Jacob Trouba long term. I think if you know you've secured his services for more than just next year as well.
Well, you know that Jacob Trouba, I mean, he's an RFA after next season
still.
So, I mean, you know that if you want his services, you have them at least for this season plus three more.
Okay, but yeah.
I mean, you do. I mean, he has no, I mean, you know, we saw, you know, the holdout earlier in the year proved to do nothing aside from cost him money. Now, he's eligible for an offer sheet and everything else and blah, 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 blah. But that's, I mean, that's a pipe dream, seemingly offer sheets in the NHL.
And Drew, just because Tyler Myers is exposed under option one
doesn't mean he gets picked
because he has $5.5 million. So the Jets don't know who Las Vegas is going to take. Las Vegas doesn't have to tell the Jets who they're going to take, right? So under option two, though, I mean, if you look at Joel Armia, he makes $900,000. He's a former first round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Vegas might take him if the Jets go with option two. Marco Dano's an RFA, but you look at Adam Lowry, if they decide to not protect him and they protect Matthew Perreault over Lowry, that's a favorable cap hit for a young team. You know, they look at Lowry and they say, maybe, you know, he'll be a good third liner for us and we can re-sign him. So the Jets, regardless of which option they go with, it's going to be a tough decision for Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Well, that's why I think it's changed so far this season. Earlier in the year, I thought, okay, you protect your 4D, you protect your four forwards, and you're going to lose one of those guys and it's no big deal. I've changed my tune a little bit because of the Tyler Myers injury factors and everything else, and the way that Armia and Lowry have been playing lately, in that maybe losing these guys is more impactful than I was giving them credit for.
But again, I mean, I had Myers exposed under option one, so
I'm just saying, I'm talking about the option the Jets would choose. I know what
right.
you had.
Well, we don't know yet, right?
Obviously, but I'm saying that just now, I think it's a more difficult decision for the Jets.
I think it was already difficult. I'm just saying, I mean, who knows? I mean, a lot of teams are going to have this problem. But, I mean, right now, do you lose a good young forward or do you lose a good veteran defenseman?
You have to ask yourself if those forwards are replaceable. Because you got to remember, ultimately, you've got guys like Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, you know, Brendan Lemieux potentially. You have a number of guys with the Moose who are, you know, Andrew Kopp could step in. So, I mean, let's be realistic. You don't want to lose those guys because you're developing them and you're spending, you know, money to develop these players and you've invested time and energy into them. But at the same time, are replacement level players in your organization?
It's all good questions, and we'll find out in June, of course, but I do think that this Tyler Myers injury status has certainly changed the conversation for the Jets as the season has progressed. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll look at the bottom, the last 41 games of the Jets' schedule. What kind of records are going to take for this team to be in the playoffs? You're listening to
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah. 41 games gone. Game 42 is in a little over 3.5 hours from now. The Jets, after 41 games, 19-19-3, 41 points. They currently, according to the good people at sportsclubstats.com, have a 24.9% chance of making the playoffs in the Central Division or the Western Conference if they were to be a wild card team. Question I have, and the question that we're going to discuss for the next number of minutes, is can the Jets get to 90 points? If the Jets were to get to 90 points, according to Sports Club stats, that's the minimum number of points they need to have a greater than 50% chance of making the playoffs.
Right.
And in layman's terms, sorry, Ezzy.
Sure.
90 points at the end of the season will give the Jets a 63% chance that they will have made the playoffs in the NHL's Western Conference.
Right, and nothing has changed over the last 2 or 3 weeks, guys. I mean, the Jets have to win 60% of their games. So they have to win 25 of their next 41 games to give themselves a really good chance making the playoffs.
If they were to win 25 games, let's say they lose a couple more games in a shootout or whatever. If they win 25, if they go 25-11-5, that'll give them 96 points on the year and a 99.8% chance of making the playoffs.
Right. So, I mean, they're going to have an extended winning streak here, guys. We've talked about it, especially this show, but certainly the last couple of weeks here. But, it's doable, Drew. And you look at, they have 41 games, as you mentioned, left in the season, halfway through the season. But I looked at it, over the next 10 or 11 games, I think is a good benchmark, because they have 11 games before the All-Star break in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Starting with this afternoon against the Buffalo Sabres. And then you've got the two home games next week against Calgary and Montreal. And Montreal doesn't have Brendan Gallagher for the next 2 months, so that's going to help them. But I think the Jets can win 7 of those next 11 games. And you've got 2 games against the Arizona Coyotes in there, the worst team in the league.
Yeah, at Arizona next Friday, home to Arizona the following Wednesday. They return the revenge of Alex Burmistrov.
Right, and you've got 2 games against the San Jose Sharks in there, and you've got a back-to-back later in the month at home against the Ducks and the Sharks, and then you've got a game against the Blackhawks. So, I looked at it, and of the next 11 games, the Jets are 7 of those 11 games are against teams that are currently in a playoff spot. So it's not an easy schedule, but I do think that they can win 7 of those 11 games. But, starting with Buffalo this afternoon, the Jets do have to go on a winning streak here, because as we talked about, if you want to win 60% of your games, winning two games out of 4 is not going to cut it.
No, and it would be one thing if they had gone on a streak earlier in the season, but at this point in time where they've been so decidedly average or below average, I would say, only winning 19 of their first 41 games. It's been the theme of the entire program. It's the time is now to win multiple games in a row. Not 2. Start with 3, but truthfully, it's more 4, 5, 6 games in a row where you can get to that elusive 500 winning percentage, not 500 points percentage.
Yeah, and I think, as he's right, I think especially starting with today in Buffalo, and we've been talking about it all morning, but this is a game you just can't afford to lose. I mean, you look at that schedule and you think to yourself, okay, again, forget about the opponent. Like, this is a critical game. It gives you the confidence because everybody's been asking you about 3 wins. You get that 3rd win. I think that would be their 5th win, road win. In a row, and the team would be having a nice roll. And then again, it would be about maintaining that momentum. And then you don't have a long gap between the games. You host Calgary on Monday, and then I think Montreal is on Wednesday. So then, and then you'll have a nice little, or then you only have a day, and then you're going off to Arizona and LA. I mean, the fact is that we've talked about it all year, and it's crazy because we talked about it with the Jets players in October and in November about banking points and the need to get those early points, because that way you're not playing catch up. Well, it's too late now. The Jets are in that role of trying to play catch up. They're on the outside looking in. And I think that, as he's right, the All-Star break is some of that critical mass. Like you're looking at these next blocks of, I think, as you said, it was 11 games. And if you can really have like 7 or 8 wins in that block, or, you know, some overtime loss or something like that, at least then you're more in the conversation. It's more reasonable to be talking about you as a playoff team.
And the best news for the Jets right now, Drew, is that the Nashville Predators and Dallas Stars continue to struggle. The Jets are only, no, they're tied right now with Nashville.
Yeah.
And sure, they've played 2 more games, but they're 1 point ahead of the Dallas Stars. So, I mean, those are the 2 teams that they have to beat out to get into the Central. Chicago and Minnesota are in. I mean, the Jets are not catching Chicago or Minnesota, so they have to beat out Nashville or Dallas, and they're struggling right now. So this is, right now, it starts with, you know, this 2-game winning streak in Florida and this game this afternoon in Buffalo. I mean, right now is a perfect opportunity to go on an extended winning streak and get really back into that playoff race. They're in it right now. I mean, they're only a couple points behind Vancouver for that last wild card spot, but... You know,
well, you know, we were talking about just, you know, in break before we started this segment. This isn't like, you know, 2 years ago where it took 99 points to make the playoffs in the Western Conference. This is, you know, again, if you're looking at the numbers, you're talking 90 points should give you a good chance to make the playoffs in the West. 95 is almost a certainty that you're going to be a Western Conference playoff team.
The Western Conference isn't as good as it was a couple of years ago, right? I mean, Dallas was I picked Dallas to win the cup. They might miss the playoffs this year.
Well, I mean, they've had Mr. Siv in net, whether it's Lehtonen or Niemi.
By the way, I don't think they will. I think they're going to turn it around.
Well, you know, they're running out of time, Ez. I mean, you know, when it's...
Time is running out?
Well, God, that was a lot of years ago, Dave. That time is running out. Every day time is running out on the Coyotes. But thankfully, that's all in the past.
Drew, as long as the Jets stick together, they'll be all right.
Yeah.
No, but I think, like, if you look at the Western Conference, you've got Chicago, Minnesota, 55, 52 points. You've got Anaheim with 50, San Jose with 48, Edmonton with 47. Other than that...
And, it's a dog's breakfast.
Yeah, and that's the whole point. I said that to Ez earlier. I said, you know, the truth is no team is running away. These teams are all kind of middling at this point. So there is room to be – like, look, we saw what Vancouver's done, right? They've gone on a little bit of a run here, 7-2-1 in their last 10, and they've thrust themselves into the playoff conversation when everyone was talking about how bad this Vancouver team was, and somehow now they're in the playoff conversation. Is it sustainable? You know, can you give up, like, 70 shots against your goalie?
Yeah, can you expect to score 4 goals on 13 shots like you did last night?
Yeah, but again – who knows? That's why they play the games, and that's why we watch the games. Is that they're, you know, they're there to play. They're there to, you know, be won. If that opportunity presents itself, so I just think that the Jets have an opportunity simply because, as Ez just said, and he's 100% right. The West isn't nearly as good as it was in the last couple of years. So it is there for the taking. If the Jets team can look, they're healthy right now. We talk about the health of this team and the schedule. We're not talking about that anymore, really, because they have a less aggressive schedule, and they'll have more practice time. And realistically, of course, injuries happen. But
and they have a bye week coming up in February.
They have a bye week, so there's another 5 games, or 5 days, sorry. But the fact is that the Jets will be in theory, healthier team. This will be the Jets team that we'll see. You know, like I said, the power play units are the power play units that Paul Maurice wants. He's talked about it. So there is no excuse in the sense that now, sure, fine, you've survived. That was the big word after the schedule, survive. We survived. Okay, you survived. Can you thrive? Because now you're going to have your full team and you have a more advantageous schedule. I mean, there's still challenges, but it's more advantageous for you in the sense that you're allowed to practice now more than you did before. So can you then take the opportunity that's in front of you, which is the team's not playing particularly well, and go for it?
Yeah, well said, Dave. I mean, if you look at even the back-to-back situations that the Jets are playing, they're not significant for the most part. You know, next week, back-to-back in Arizona, Los Angeles, not a significant travel there. Then they're home Monday, Tuesday. That's a home back-to-back. Rare, but the Jets have a number of them. Coming up in February, they have a Friday, Saturday home back-to-back against the Blackhawks and the Lightning. Difficult, but at least they're at home. There's no travel. In March, they have a home back-to-back against the Blues and then the Avalanche. So again, these are back-to-back situations, but there's no travel involved. So there are no excuses if the Jets want to go on that run, if they want to get to that 90-point benchmark necessary to really be a likely Western Conference playoff team. It does start this afternoon with the Buffalo Sabres and game 42 on the Jets' 82-game schedule. Let's head to break. When we come back, we talk about some news and notes about our next week's opponents, the Flames and the Canadiens, who are in town Monday and Wednesday. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hands it off for Nathan Bolian to Weber, firing. That one hit Gallagher in front. Another shot, and Gallagher is hurt. The shot hit him in the hand. Gallagher is hunched over on the Canadiens bench.
One final segment, Saturday morning here on TSN1290. Hustler and Lawless, they're coming up in about 12 minutes' time. I did find it amusing earlier this week, and I'm sure you guys saw it too, where Hustler was complaining, God bless you, Andrew, complaining about having to be up at 9 a.m., the poor guy, having to wake up at 9 a.m. to be here, to get here for the early morning show, at which point in time, I believe I tweeted at him, wanna trade, and Rick reminded him that we had to be on at 6 in the morning. So hopefully, Hus, you're able to, I'm sure you're listening, and hopefully you've been able to scrounge your way out of bed and get here in time for your 9 a.m. showtime coming up in about 10 minutes' time.
Don't worry about Hus. Hus will be okay.
I'm sure Hus will be fine. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see a sleep-deprived Hustler. It'll be interesting to see him, ooze into the studio as it is at 9 in the morning.
I'm not worried about Hus. I'm worried about Drew. I think you're going to have to go home and take a little grandpa nap.
Oh, 100% that when Erin goes down for her nap, I'm going to try and take a nap at the same time. That was off the board in Vegas. It was guaranteed 100%.
A two-hour nap.
Oh, if Erin takes a two-hour nap, I'll be glad to take a two-hour nap.
No, but remember a couple of weeks ago you guys were saying that a two-hour sleep, it's actually not a nap if it's 2 hours?
Right. Well, that's what you were advocating. You were saying that you come home from work and take a two-hour nap, and then we have to explain to you. And Dave, I think that was a midweek conversation. I think you can back us up on it, that a two-hour nap after work isn't a nap at all. It's actually just going to sleep for 2 hours.
Yeah, it's no. I think anything over 45 minutes is over a nap.
Yeah.
I disagree.
Yeah, wow. I'm not surprised. You're the guy who's taking the two-hour naps.
I don't think it's a sleep. I think it has to be at least 4 hours for it to be asleep.
I mean, I've been asleep the whole show, so I don't know. But so is that a nap or
you
is
just
that
woke
like
up. Yeah. Where am I? What am I doing here?
Like if you came home from work and had something to do at 7 o'clock, and you wouldn't say I slept for an hour and a half. You'd say I took an hour and a half nap.
You might say it. People are going to look at you like that's a pretty long nap.
I like long naps.
Brendan Gallagher, the Montreal Canadiens. The Habs going to be in town on Wednesday to face the Jets.
Love Brendan Gallagher. He's got to stay out of those Shea Weber shooting lanes.
Man alive. He blasts the Shea Weber shot, blasts him in the hand. It's announced. You could see immediately that it's a bad injury. It's a fractured left hand. He's going to be out 8 weeks. A significant loss to a Montreal Canadiens team that has been hit by the injury bug. And I guess fortuitously for the Winnipeg Jets, they might be catching the Habs at a decent time. Paul Byron, who's been very good for the Habs this year, also out of the lineup. David Desharnais, Andrew Shaw, Greg Patterin, Galchenyuk, and Markov close to returning to the Habs lineup. But it'll be interesting to see on Wednesday who the Habs have in their lineup when they come to Winnipeg to face the Jets at MTS Center.
Yeah, and I think, when you look at the Montreal Canadiens, it's pretty amazing that they've remained at the top of the Eastern Conference standings. But Max Pacioretty and Alexander Radulov have been absolutely fantastic for the Montreal Canadiens. Shea Weber scored a goal against his old team in Nashville about 4 days ago. So, this Habs team has lots of depth, but losing Brendan Gallagher, and I realize maybe his point totals aren't what he expected them to be this year, but he's a player that plays a significant role for the Habs. So, yes, the Jets are going to face a wounded Montreal Canadiens team, but as you mentioned, Alex Galchenyuk, Andre Markov, they're getting close to returning. And, Drew, when you have Carey Price between the pipes, you always have a chance to win.
Yes, exactly. Carey Price is, of course, the key. You're going to see Nikita Sherbeck make his debut for the Habs tonight in Toronto when the Habs and the Leafs do battle. So that'll be interesting to see.
By the way, props to Al Montoya for getting a contract extension with the Habs.
Yeah, certainly good for him, for Al Montoya. That's certainly related, of course, to
expansion.
the expansion draft.
But,
leave him exposed.
He played well, especially early on in the season when Carey Price missed a little bit of time there. But give Montoya a lot of credit. Played for the Jets for a couple years, and gets another NHL contract.
Absolutely. The Jets' opponent on Monday night at MTS Center is going to be the Calgary Flames. After a slow start, the Flames have certainly reasserted themselves in the Western Conference playoff race. 21-18-2, good for 44 points. They hold down the first wild card spot. Of course, lost last night to Vancouver, in which was a quote-unquote four-point matchup as the Canucks moved to within a point of the Flames. But those Calgary Flames team, we've seen them a little bit. And then, you know, after the slow start to the season, they've been very good, and they're being led by what's called the 3M line. That's Mikael Backlund, Michael Frolik, and Matthew Tkachuk. Those three players doing a great job for the Flames as of late.
Yeah, and that's been the third line for the Calgary Flames, and they've broken up Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan on those top two lines. They were together, of course, in the rookie seasons, but, I mean, this Calgary Flames team, I've said it before, Drew, there are a lot of parallels between the Flames and the Jets, and, you know, it's the biggest surprise for me for the Flames this season is that Chad Johnson has emerged as the number one goaltender mm-hmm. over Brian Elliott. So, you know, the Flames have, you know, maintained their position kind of in that first wild card spot, but still a team that has had their ups and downs this year. They've struggled at times at home. I think they've won only 5 of their last 10 games. So, you know, a big test for the Jets, but certainly a winnable game, because Calgary's big problem this year has been on the defensive side of the puck.
Sure.
They can score goals. And, yeah. you know, you mentioned, you know, Matthew Tkachuk, Michael Frolik, and Mikael Backlund. That's a pretty darn good third line. And then you throw in Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau. Sam Bennett's having an underrated year. So scoring goals is not their problem. It's keeping it out of their own net.
Yeah, absolutely. The Flames, you know, given up 116 goals on the year, 111 goals for. So they have, that's really been where their difficulty is.
And that line of Tkachuk,
Frolik and Backlund
have been so good. Like, they're behind, their Corsi, adjusted Corsi 4 is actually just behind Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak when he was healthy in Boston. So, I mean, they have been like one of the top lines in terms of generating shots and possession in the NHL.
Dave,
so,
it's way too early in the morning to start pulling out those advanced stats. I mean, come on,
Corsi four.
Got to wait till at least 11 o'clock before you bring that out.
I gotta say that was a little bit early for an 8:55 in the morning adjusted Corsi four.
Well, I mean, I had to get something in here.
I'm more curious. You know, what's your adjusted Corsi of breakfast sandwiches or something at this hour?
At this point, it's a bagel and chocolate milk, most likely. So,
there you go.
No, I actually think the Jets have to respond for the loss in Calgary. I mean, I think that game was such a punch in the nose. There's Huss. But that game was such a punch in the nose to
the king is in the building.
To the Jets. I mean, you go in and to Calgary, you're expecting to have a good effort, and they were terrible. I mean, that was just an awful game. So I think that there's a little bit of revenge. Can't look ahead too far. Obviously, they're not looking ahead. They're thinking about Buffalo right now. But there, I think there's going to be an opportunity for them to kind of get that revenge on the Flames for what happened to them in Calgary earlier this season.
It all starts, of course, in Buffalo tonight, this afternoon, coming up in about 3 hours' time, where the Jets and the Sabres will do battle. The Jets looking for that elusive third victory in a row. We'll have the game for you, of course, here on TSN 1290. It's on TSN 3 as well. That's it for us this early Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Mike Harrington, Jeff Hamilton, and Jacob McFlicker, in case you missed any of the show. It's available for download on iTunes and on IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Big props to Alex behind the board doing a great job. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless next on TSN 1290.